Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to eClerx Services Limited Q4 FY20 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Rohit Gupta, CFO of eClerx Services Limited. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you. Good evening, and thank you for joining eClerx Q4 and FY20 earnings call for the year ending 31st March 2020. Firstly, I would like to thank our employees, customers, shareholders, regulators, and vendor partners who have very thoughtfully helped us over the last few months in reducing the economic, business, and employee health risk caused by the pandemic. The delivery paradigm for BPM industry and eClerx changed overnight. I want to specifically call out the monumental efforts of our IT teams to achieve an unimaginable feat of migrating from closed ODC environment to flexible work-from-home environment in a matter of weeks, supported by our administration team to deliver work-from-home assets during lockdowns, and our HR team for reaching out every single employee to check for their well-being. As a combined effort, we reached a work-from-home coverage by mid-April, which exceeded similar metric of our much larger client captives and BPM peers in India. Our work-from-home switch was very swift in our global operations due to higher proportion of pre-existing work-from-home infrastructure. By May end, we were able to achieve work-from-home productivity very similar to work-from-office. Our focus in last few months has been on relentless execution of business continuity plan with single-minded focus on employee safety. Last 10 days or so of March were severely impacted for India delivery due to sudden transition, which required us to put multiple pieces together, including client approvals, availability of computers and broadband at employee homes, and enablement of data security on a very challenging and diverse IT environment. Almost all of our clients were extremely supportive for work-from-home enablement, including nearly all of the banking clients, thereby approving vast majority of our offshore delivery to work from home in very quick time. Further, in some cases, where certain processes such as voice were not approved to do work from home, we were able to eventually migrate them to alternate work streams such as chat. Onshore consulting and flight-related delivery were also impacted for part of March due to furloughs and shelter-in-place orders. Our CLX was hit the hardest in Q4 due to severe health crisis caused early on due to COVID-19 in Italy. We hope that demand situation for CLX will be alleviated in Q2 as Italy returns to an early normalcy now, and we hope to see more brands ready to use our nimbler CGI capabilities, thereby accelerating market shift from traditional photo shoot and post-production processes to CGI. Overall peak supply constraints impact and demand softness led revenue decrease due to COVID are likely to play out in Q1, and hence Q1 will see considerable decrease in top line and possibly more adverse impact on bottom line, and we hope to return to our historical performance levels now by late FY21. On demand side, we saw delays both in go-lives of new projects and roll-offs. Although roll-offs have exceeded new sales for last few months, contributing to anticipated revenue decline in Q1. New client conversations also slowed down as clients were reassessing their priorities and reshuffling their budgets. Amongst our client industry sectors, travel was hit the hardest. However, that is about 2% of our total revenue, thereby not causing any major impact on us. Much of our revenue comes from Fortune 500 type clients in industries that did not come to a complete standstill during this crisis. That coupled with the fact that we were close to 90% delivery within a month of lockdown ensured that revenue impact due to supply constraints was limited only to late March and April. On pricing front, H2 FY20 was relatively better period for us as we locked price hikes with several of our top 10 clients. Our near-term approach is to offer client price competitive managed services solutions to their emerging challenges and changing priorities in tackling COVID impacts on their businesses. Moving on to Q4 financials, eClerx completed Q4 with US$47.7 million in revenue, with a constant currency decline of about 6.4% on YOY basis, with vast majority of decline coming from offshore business. Half of the QOQ decline of about US$4 million was attributable to COVID-impacted supply situation, whereas rest of the decline was due to planned roll-offs that happened earlier in the quarter but could not be replenished due to tough demand environment. Amongst our strategic areas, analytics has maintained double-digit growth in Q4 YOY, but we saw decline in managed services in Q4. Due to lower volumes in Q4, direct impact on travel clients who majorly are on managed services model and coupled with supply constraints in later part of Q4 as discussed earlier. Our other income during Q4 increased sharply by about INR 55 million due to Forex movement related revaluations. Our EBIT in Q4 stood at INR 760 million, declining sequentially with almost all of the decline contributed by the revenue drop. Our hedges of about $127 million will strike at 75.2 rupees to a dollar, giving us visibility of locking rates similar to current spot over next 2 years. However, on FY20 annual basis, we return to a modest constant currency growth of 0.6%, closing the year at US$200.5 million. We have not accrued SEIS income for FY20, and we will review that during H1 of FY21 when SEIS policy implementation is clearer and foreign trade normalizes. Our FY20 EBIT stood at INR 2,993 million, which was lower by about INR 121 million YOY. However, it remained flat if we were to adjust it for SEIS and impact of AS116. Our cash balance at year-end stood comfortably above $100 million, and we had an exceptional operating cash flow generation in FY20 at about INR 3,328 million, which is more than 150% excluding the possible catch-up of SEIS income, further sequential decline in revenue and absolute EBIT in Q4 due to increased work-from-home costs. We expect CAPEX and thereby depreciation to increase during FY21 due to provisioning of work-from-home infrastructure. We have taken several measures, however, to minimize this margin impact due to new unplanned costs, through 1 to 2 quarters deferral of increment and promotion cycle, natural reduction in travel costs, and administrative services and office rental costs. We are also seeing reduction in attrition in Q1, which may help bring productivity improvements in the near term. We expect our FY21 effective tax rate to be around 26%. We are seeing this deal closing target search for inorganic growth, all target valuation. The most valuable crisis, and we expect to distribute it to shareholders as per our stated policy, but only after due consideration for higher cash needs of the organic business during the current uncertainty, and for increased probability of inorganic growth event. Except for unforeseen circumstances during March, we are satisfied with the overall outcome of this year and will continue to focus on execution in FY21 to overcome challenges posed by the economic environment. With this, I will open up for the Q&A.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Anyone who wishes to ask a question at this time, you may please press star and one. The first question is from the line of Manik Talreja from NK Global. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening to the management. Both PD, this is a question both for PD and Anjan. If you could detail out your thoughts across the three streams of our business in terms of how you're seeing the business get impacted because of COVID and how do you see things evolving going forward?
Hi, Manik. This is PD. So let me attempt to answer and Anjan can supplement with his thoughts.
Sure.
I think as Rohitash alluded to in his opening remarks, we've seen softness in a couple of specific areas. One definitely was CLX because of the situation that was prevailing in northern Italy, which affected not just us, but also our clients who were unable to send work to us because they were also in lockdown.
Yes.
We've also seen impact on our retail and travel clients, who are clients of the digital business. We saw some impact initially on the voice processes, like Rohitash mentioned, because, those aren't very amenable to being delivered from home. Mm-hmm. But on the whole, I would say, our telecom business and the banking business has been more resilient because I guess to a degree, the nature of work done is more business as usual support and less discretionary in that sense. With all that said, I think if I net it out, you saw that we had a drop in Q4 over Q3. Q1 we expect will be the trough because, we'll have some supply side effect that still lingered on through most of April and we certainly have demand side effects to play in Q1.
Mm-hmm.
I think as we go forward, the hope is that, we should slowly start seeing recovery from the trough of Q1. The pace of that recovery is still uncertain because I think it's linked also with the pace of opening up in the West. Mm-hmm. But, I think broadly speaking, we would expect sequentially some improvement in the remaining quarters. If all goes well, hopefully by the time we get to Q4 this year, we'll be at a similar trajectory as where we were in Q4 last year. But I mean, that's just shooting in the dark. I have no concrete way to say that. It's not certainly not a guidance. But I think directionally we are quite clear that Q1 should be the trough and hopefully from Q2 we should see a modest recovery from there. But Anjan, I'll leave it to you to add on thoughts.
No, I've got nothing to add to that. That's good.
Sure. So the other question that I had was for Rohitash. So you talked about some cost related to work from home enablement hitting us in Q1. Is there some hit of that cost even in Q4 FY20?
So Manik, Q4 was very minimal. Q1 is the substantial cost, which will run into multiple of crores. But I think Q4 was very negligible on that count.
Sure. Thank you and all the best for the future. And stay safe.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sandeep Agarwal from Edelweiss. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking my question. I wish good health and stay safe to the whole team. PD, I have just one, I'll say two questions basically. One, where do you think that, the impact of COVID will start flattening out? I understand you're saying Q4 is the one where you will see probably the same level of activity which was there earlier. But this is also, you know, the question is more relevant from the perspective that we have seen quite a bit of pain before that also. So how will you put this, that this pain puts at, put our recovery more behind than we were earlier anticipating to the extent of the impact of this pandemic, or it has a rippling effect of exaggerating that that pain for us, in the sense that if we were earlier expecting a 3-4 quarters recovery time and this pandemic lets the impact of 2 quarters, so is it a 6-quarter pain versus your earlier expectation, or it could be 8-9 quarters pain? That is the way output. So I'm not saying exactly the quarters going forward. I'm just trying to understand whether there is a rippling impact of this pandemic also on our recovery path.
So, Sandeep, I'll confess I'm not sure I fully understood your question, but let me try and attempt to answer it in a different way. So if you go back to the statement I made to Manik, which again I'll caveat by saying it's conjecture at this point, that we, you know, we hope that Q4 of FY21 gets us back to levels of where we were in Q4 FY20. If that scenario plays out, then effectively we've lost a year, right? Because it's taken us a year to get down to the trough and then get back to the place where we were pre-pandemic. So that's one way of thinking about it, that I guess, you know, Q4 was a $48 to $15 million quarter. So the next time we reach that milestone is when I would say that we have reversed the effect of the pandemic.
Okay. And also, to some extent, I wanted to understand that, you know, why we are talking about only the cost hike, because if you see, there are many areas where cost cutting could be significant, and you know, this is probably the time where, you know, we can re-innovate or rethink on our cost structure. I understand that, you know, in our business model, work from home cannot be as well implemented, say, as easily doable like the probably the software services part, but still I think there are a lot of areas where we can contain cost in a significant way. Second, why we are not allowing our natural attrition to not fill up for some time, till the time we are seeing not having clarity of growth coming back, or till the time we see that, you know, we could be in a revenue declining scenario. So is it a very optimistic outlook for future, so that we are ready to take a hit right now, or is there something else which I'm missing? Thanks. That is my last question.
So, Sandeep, let me answer that in reverse order. Your first question was about natural attrition. And if you look at the investor pack, you know, we have a slide on headcount. And you will see that we were at 9,500 total headcount in FY19 Q4. And we are at 8,500 total headcount in FY20 Q4. So we have dropped 1,000 FTE, give or take, over that one-year period. Exactly for the reasons you described, that, you know, obviously, as we saw some challenges on the revenue front, we let natural attrition take its course and right-size the, you know, the staff strength. Obviously, post the pandemic, I would say, to the comments Rohitash made, attrition has really, really reduced, because, you know, obviously, if you put yourself in the shoes of the employees, it's hard also for them to find alternative positions at this time. So April and May, I think we've seen our lowest attrition ever. But before that, to the point that you were making, exactly that is a strategy, that we have allowed natural attrition to rebalance total team size. On your first question of, you know, cost-saving opportunities, absolutely. I think, you know, we've tried to utilize all those opportunities. Rohitash mentioned that we have deferred pay raises from between 3 to 6 months, and after a certain seniority in the organization, you know, senior management has elected to keep its pay flat this year. Obviously, we've had savings on travel. We've had some savings on services like local transport, the cab services and buses that we run, housekeeping, etc. So there will be substantial elements of savings as well that will offset the BCP imposed costs. And therefore, I think, you know, to your point, probably the biggest net driver of reduction in margin in Q1 is the drop in revenue. So we do expect a drop in revenue in Q1 over Q4. And, you know, the margin that was coming from that revenue will also go consequently. So, I mean, I think from a BCP perspective, not all the costs are incremental. I think we have the ability to offset a lot of it. But, you know, the drop in revenue will definitely be painful.
A follow-up on that, I agree that the point you mentioned of 9,500 becoming 8,500, but our attrition rate is such that, you know, we could have brought down probably this number to 75-78, unless, you know, it was very, very critical, or we have probably not, we have built in some bench for some sharp turnaround in growth, which probably got impacted due to COVID-19. So I was just trying to understand that limited point, that was there a sharp turnaround in sight which got impacted because of this thing?
No, so Sandeep, sorry, if I can just respond to that. If you look at revenues, FY19 was give or take 200 million, FY20 was also give or take 200 million. And we dropped 1,000 heads over that period, right, for delivering essentially the same revenue. So I think we were quite happy with our exit in FY20 Q4. We feel that that 8,500 headcount was right-sized to service the base of revenue that we had at that point. You know, from a bench perspective, from a utilization perspective, we thought that all those metrics were in the right zone.
Okay, that's all from my side. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Any participants who wish to ask a question at this time, then please press star and one. The line of Madhu Babu from Central.
Yeah, hi. What is
that? That's pretty clear, given that we are in sort of, you know, almost mid-June by now. So we thought of the COVID impact to at least show you the direction that we expect. I wouldn't want to share a precise number at this stage.
Okay. And second, on the capital allocation, now the cash is around 770 crore. Last time we did around 265 crore kind of the buyback. So, I mean, even if you conserve cash, I think a similar quantum of payout can be expected this year, because the balance sheet is sizable in terms of the net cash position.
So we haven't taken a call on that, but I would add two points of caution. One is that, you know, to the point we made, we do expect to see more inorganic opportunities in the wake of the COVID pandemic, because especially for smaller companies, you know, I think this has imposed stress on their business models. So, you know, Rohitash probably receives about 20 to 25 teasers any given year. We expect this year, you know, we'll see a significant increment to that. So we want to retain some cash to take advantage of those opportunities if they should present themselves, point one. Point two also, you know, I think from our own internal perspective, obviously there is a little bit more uncertainty than usual, given the impact of this pandemic. Is there a second wave, not a second wave? So we'd want to conserve cash also, you know, to hedge against that uncertainty. Having said that, you know, our stated policy is to pay out at least 50% of net income. And I think from that perspective, we remain committed to doing that over periods of time.
So just on that CLX part, I think predominantly they are based in Italy. So, which has been one of the most hit, and we have a couple of other centers in Thailand as well, apart from US. So just on the global delivery centers, how is the momentum and acquisition? What is the target we are looking this time? Because it's been a good amount of time since we have done a sizable acquisition.
Yeah, so on the CLX front, you know, I think as we shared, we saw some effect in the in March because Italy went into shutdown basically end of February. April was the trough, May was slightly better. June is, I would say, almost close to normal. Hopefully, July will be semi-normal in terms of production volumes at CLX. So that's been the trajectory that we've seen in CLX. And Thailand is basically a back office to Italy. So the volumes they see are a function of the incoming demand into Italy. In terms of your second question on areas of interest, and I think that hasn't really changed. We continue to like businesses that serve large corporate clients, you know, typically are performing work that has continuing demand, and therefore they tend to have long tenure relationships with their customers. You know, I think those are pretty broad filters, and the nature of the customer base and the type of work are important filters for us, besides, of course, financial filters around valuations, etc. So we continue to look within that target segment.
Sir, and last one is work from home team. I mean, is it going to continue even post-COVID, or is it just overhyped for the medium term? And how are we, because we are not a typical IT service company, we are process-driven, and, you know, at least large banking accounts, the approvals might be difficult. So next 3-4 year perspective, how do you see this work from home, whether it will be a part of your existing delivery model or it will just fade away? Thanks.
So I think it's not totally clear at this stage. I'll share with you where we are and sort of near term what we see. So it did take us time to convert a large part of our workforce into work from home, because all the IT infrastructure we had was desktops in the office, besides laptops that were given to, you know, relatively senior employees. So first of all, the challenge for us was to procure laptops in that quantity along with things like data cards, and then distribute them to all the employees in the middle of the lockdown and the curfews. So that was a Herculean challenge, but we got over that, and I think today, of our 8,500 staff, you know, probably I would say barring maybe 300 to 500 people, everybody else is equipped to work productively from home. So I think we have managed to make that transition to the point that Rohitash was sharing in his opening remarks. As we go through this model, you know, I think it has both pros and cons. So we definitely see, people able to put in more time if required, because, you know, they no longer have to spend time on the commute. On the other hand, there is a latency penalty, because obviously their connectivity at home may not be as good as that in the office. There's also information security risk enhanced when people work from home as compared to what they're able to manage in the office. And from a client perspective, I would say some clients don't have a strong opinion on where the work is done, but some others do, and they tend to prefer people working from the office. Primarily, I would think from an security. I guess that once the health situation stabilizes, we will end up, you know, we're going back to the offices. Although a small percentage of staff may continue to work from home services. But I think people engaged in doing work that handles sensitive data, I would think that most clients would be more comfortable having them back within the confines of the office and a more controlled environment. Anjan, I don't know if you want to add something to this.
No, I think you got it.
Okay, yeah. Okay, thanks, sir.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of VP Rajesh from Banyan Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for the opportunity. My first question is, what is the ramp up in Fayette facility? Has it started coming back to a normal kind of shift mode that you used to have earlier before the COVID happened?
Anjan, do you want to respond to that?
Yeah, so actually Fayetteville has been one of the first facilities to get back to normal. So I think over this week and next week, we're basically expecting to be back to normal over there. I think that we're obviously going to be taking into account things like social distancing and some of the new rules that may be put into place. But North Carolina is probably one of the states that wasn't that hard hit. So it's been relatively quick to return.
I see. So from an operating level, did it be profitable or break even or losing money?
Didi, do you want to take that one?
Rohitash, I think you'll be best equipped to answer that question.
Yeah, so VP, I think we have spoken about it in previous calls as well. So in Q4, we were profitable at EBIT level, excluding the COVID impact. And for the full year, we were EBITDA positive in FY20 in Fayetteville.
Right. And in terms of, you know, Q1, Would that be the case, or meaning what I'm trying to understand is that once it normalizes, it will back to being profitable. Is that a fair assumption?
Yeah, so as Anjan was mentioning, now we are returning back to office in Fayetteville. The second caveat will be that, you know, the normal volumes should also come through. So once these two things happen, when I say normal, I mean, you know, let's say February kind of volumes. Once that comes in, you know, we will be back to a bit positive straight away.
Okay. Okay. My next question is regarding the capital allocation. So we are sitting about $100 million of cash, and looking at the free cash flow, we probably generate another, let's say, $30 million of cash flow per year. So in terms of the acquisition, yes, I agree that you will get a lot more opportunities these years. But given where the stock price is, and I think last year we did the buyback at 1500. So therefore, it makes sense to go for a buyback, because whatever cash is left even after that, I'm sure you will be able to find acquisition candidates that you have enough cash. So I'm just curious, like, how you guys are thinking about it, because the stock is at 25% of your last buyback price.
Yeah, so I think definitely the buyback is an option for us. And, as you may know, we've used the buyback as a vehicle to return cash to shareholders pretty consistently over the last 3 or 4 years. So, it continues to be an option for us. Price, size, et cetera, is all TBD, timing as well. But you're right. I think that's an option under active consideration.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Akshay Ramnani from Access Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thank you. My question is on pricing. So you mentioned that you expect to provide some price concessions to client. So what is the quantum of price concessions are you seeing right now, and how much of these price discount, what do you call it, as temporary or permanent in nature? And how soon do you expect to recoup on the pricing front?
So, Akshay, this is Rohitash. I think you misheard. I very clearly mentioned we have seen uptick in the pricing, and H2 of FY20 has been relatively better for us on the client pricing front. So there was no discussion on the price reduction. Now, if your question is about forward-looking, do we have to give price concession? I don't think there is any such consideration or request on the table as of now.
Okay, okay. So you don't see any material pricing talks with the clients currently. And in this scenario where we could aggressively do some price, provide some pricing discounts to clients, and we have been seeing some shift to on-site delivery for a few years now. So would you call this COVID as a point where you can think about offshoring more of your work with providing some price concessions to clients?
PD?
Anjan, do you want to take that?
Yeah, I think if the question is broadly, do we see any change in the demand for onshore work or offshore work because of COVID? Not necessarily. I mean, I think in the early days, or the middle of March, or late March, there was some discussion about whether, there was too much concentration risk in India for many of our clients. But I think as time has passed, there's actually been more comfort built around the way India managed, or the Indian vendors and the captives managed delivery during this period. So I'd say that there's actually been more confidence built. So to the extent that you feel, do you think that there's an opportunity to do more offshore work? We think so, yes. Do we continue to feel that customers will want work done in their local jurisdictions as a result of, more localized demand because the customers are not able to travel as much? That also, possibly, yes. So I think, we see demand both for offshore and onshore over the medium term, but we don't think that there's a marked reduction or increase one way or the other.
Okay, okay, sure, that's helpful. And last one on revenues. Can you quantify what percentage of the revenue would come from impacted verticals of, say, travel, retail, manufacturing, or other impacted verticals as per your sense? And what's the proportion of revenue where you have been seeing challenges? Any color on that front?
Ritesh, in supplement, I'll just kick off with a couple of thoughts. You know, I think that the answer to that question is also a function of time horizon, because, you know, obviously in the immediate aftermath of the lockdown, we saw some constraints, you know, almost across the board. But then as time progressed, you know, in certain areas, we were almost able to get back to what I would call normal levels of demand and delivery. Continuing effect, I think, is more in most in travel and retail, and to some degree also in the luxury business in Italy. So I'd say primarily concentrated around our digital business. Next would be some impact on our customer ops business, and least affected would be the banking business. Purely, again, as a function of the kind of work we do in each of those three verticals. But Ritesh, you can add some more color if you want.
Yeah, that covers it all, PD. So I already mentioned, Akshay, that, you know, travel is barely 2% of our total revenue. Retail, if you include the luxury good brands in it, is probably high single digits. And beyond that, you know, it's banking, telecom, high-tech, those kind of industries which make up, you know, vast majority of our revenue, which were not majorly impacted, I would say.
Sure, that's it. Thanks, that's it from my side.
Thank you. A reminder to our participants, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and one. We have the next question as a follow-up question from the line of Manik Talreja from NK Global. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity once again. So, PD, I wanted to pick your brains on a couple of things. Number one thing is that, at least with in some parts of our services portfolio, we typically compete with the captive of our customers. And in the past, when we've seen currency essentially depreciate sharply, with some lag, we've seen more competition emerging from the captive side, or that translating in terms of price discounts. So your thoughts there. And the second question is that one of our large customer on the telecom media side essentially has also been building up his own captive in Chennai. How do you see the situation evolve with that customer over the medium to longer term?
So I'm going to let Anjan respond to both of these. I think he'll do a better job than me of answering it, Manik.
Sure.
So, Manik, we've had, you know, captives have been a way of life for the last few decades, in fact, the last 2.5 decades. So I'm not really sure if it's a new phenomenon as such. Mm-hmm. If you look at, actually, IT wages indexed to U.S. dollars over the last decade or so, I think you'll find that most of it's compounded. Most indices will show you a compounding increase of between 5 and 7% per annum, right?
Yes.
So we, and I think if you compare, for example, vendor prices like ours, you'll see that they've been flat to declining because of productivity, rate changes, lower inflation rates, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, or skill mix, et cetera, et cetera. So I think what I would say is that our experienced buyers know that game very well, that, mm-hmm. you know, going from vendor to captive or picking the captive strategy is typically a pretty short-term 1 to 2 year viewpoint, whereas I think if you look at total cost of ownership over 3 to 7 years of the vendor model, typically is cheaper. Caveat at 4, obviously functions that are very sensitive or functions that are rapidly changing or that need to be co-located with technology because there's a big technology roadmap may have a different consideration, right? Mm-hmm. So we don't really see that captive vendor choice being driven so much by FX, but much more by broader discussions about, okay, look, what functions are still core and proprietary that they have to stay in, or those that they feel that co-locate with strategic technology roadmaps, giving it to vendors actually slows it down, right? So I think that's usually the first determination. We haven't really seen that change, and I think in COVID times, we don't know what the next steps are given just the travel restrictions that many of our stakeholders will have around sending work to yeah. India, or in fact setting up new captives. You know, I mean, I guess it's somewhat reflected in recent times and in reductions and roll off. But you know, that's it's very temporary for now, as far as we can see. The second question around the large telco media. I mean, this particular company uses something in the region of 25,000 vendor personnel just in the call center space, for example. And, you know, they are very sophisticated buyers of both what I would call third-party services as well as in-house facilities, both for customer care, for field operations, and for technology services. So, in fact, they buy a lot from most parts of the world. So I would say for a sophisticated buyer like that, you know, these additional facilities tend to be at best an and. They tend very rarely really to be an all or none decision. So, you know, we don't expect, never is a big word, but we don't really expect any change in the strategy with respect to us or with, you know, what I would call high performing vendors in the short to medium term.
Sure. Thank you, Vin. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question for today. I now hand the conference over to the management for their closing comments. Thank you, and over to you.
Thank you, everyone, for joining with us today. Hope you guys will stay safe and look forward to talking to you next time.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of eClerx Services Limited, that concludes today's call. Thank you all for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.